not making Wickham's worthlessness more known, for if he had, no young woman of character would have dared love or confide in him. He generously imputed the whole to his mistaken pride, and confessed that he had before thought it beneath him to lay his private actions open to the world. He called it, therefore, his duty to step forward and endeavour to remedy an evil which had been brought on by himself. There is a lady, it seems, a Mrs. Young, who was some time ago governess to Miss Darcy, and was dismissed from her charge on some cause of disapprobation, though he did not say what. She then took a large house in Edward Street, and has since maintained herself by letting lodgings. This Mrs. Young was, he knew, intimately acquainted with Wickham, and he went to her for intelligence of him as soon as he got to town. But it was 2 or 3 minutes of savage beating before he could get from her what he wanted. She would not betray her trust, I suppose, without an application of severe blows about the head and neck. At length, however, our kind friend procured the wished-for direction. They were in Hens Quarry Street. Mr. Darcy saw Wickham, and with no want of force, insisted on seeing Lydia. His first object with her, he acknowledged, had been to persuade her to quit her present disgraceful situation and return to her friends as soon as they could be prevailed on to receive her, offering his assistance as far as it would go. But he found Lydia absolutely resolved on remaining where she was. She cared for none of her friends. She wanted no help of his. She would not hear of leaving Wickham, who, in spite of his abducting her, she claimed to love more than anything on earth. Since such were her feelings, Mr. Darcy had but one choice to restore her honour, to secure and expedite a marriage between she and Wickham. But the latter had no intentions of marrying, and as to his future situation, he could conjecture very little about it. He must go somewhere, but he did not know where, and he knew he should have nothing to live on. Mr. Darcy asked him why he did not marry your sister at once. Though Mr. Bennet was not imagined to be very rich, he would be able to do something for him, and his situation would be benefited by marriage. But he found, in reply to this question, that Wickham still cherished the hope of more effectually making his fortune by marriage into a family of greater means. Mr. Darcy saw an opportunity here, and met with Wickham again to propose a solution beneficial to all parties. Mr. Wickham, after a great deal of consideration, agreed. Everything being settled between them, Mr. Darcy's next step was to make your uncle acquainted with the arrangement, and he first called in Section 6 East the evening before I came home, and they had a great deal of talk together. They met again on Sunday, and then I saw him too. It was not all settled before Monday. As soon as it was, the express was sent off to Longbourn. The terms were as follows. Wickham's debts were to be paid, amounting, I believe, to considerably more than £1,000, plus another £1,000 per annum to sustain him. In return, he would marry Lydia, thus restoring her honour and that of the Bennet family. Second, he would allow Mr. Darcy to render him lame as punishment for a lifetime of vice and betrayal, and to ensure that he would never lay another hand in anger nor leave another bastard behind. To spare what little of his reputation remained, the injuries would be attributed to a carriage accident. Finally, he would pursue the priesthood in hopes that the teachings of Christ would improve his general character. Darcy personally saw to it that all of this was attended to with the greatest expedience. I dare say he took particular pleasure in beating Mr. Wickham lame. I fancy, Lizzie, that stubbornness is the real defect of his character, after all. He has been accused of many faults at different times, but this is the true one. He insisted on shouldering the entire burden himself. Though I am sure, and I do not speak it to be thanked, therefore say nothing about it, your uncle would most readily have settled the whole. He and your uncle battled it together for a long time, which was more than either the gentleman or lady concerned in it deserved. But at last your uncle was forced to yield, and instead of being allowed to be of use to his niece, was forced to put up with only having the probable credit of it, which went sorely against the grain. And I really believe your letter this morning gave him great pleasure, because it required an explanation that would rob him of his borrowed feathers, and give the praise where it was due. But, Lizzie, this must go no farther than yourself, or Jane, at most. The reason why all this was to be done by him alone was such as I have given above. It was owing to him, to his reserve, that Wickham's character had been so misunderstood. Perhaps there was some truth in this, though I doubt whether his reserve or anybody's reserve can be answerable to anything so scandalous. But in spite of all this fine talking, my dear Lizzie, you may rest perfectly assured that your uncle would never have yielded if we had not been convinced of Mr. Darcy's having another interest in the affair. When all this was resolved on, he returned again to his friends, who were still staying at Pemberley, but it was agreed that he should be in London once more when the wedding took place, and all money matters were then to receive the last finish. I believe I have now told you everything. It is a relation which you tell me is to give you great surprise. I hope at least it will not afford you any displeasure. Lydia came to us, and Wickham, newly lame, was carried to the house to recover and to be fitted for his travelling bed, which Mr. Darcy generously paid for. I would not tell you how little I was satisfied with your sister's behaviour while she remained with us, if I had not perceived by Jane's letter last Wednesday that her conduct on coming home was exactly as reprehensible, and therefore what I now tell you can give you no fresh pain. Mr. Darcy was punctual in his return, and, as Lydia informed you, attended the wedding. He dined with us the next day, gave his congratulations to the new couple, and took leave. Will you be very angry with me, my dear Lizzie, if I take this opportunity of saying how much I like him? His behaviour to us has, in every respect, been as pleasing as when we were in Derbyshire. His understanding and opinions all please me. He wants nothing but a little more liveliness, and that, if he marry prudently, his wife may teach him. I thought him very sly. He hardly ever mentioned your name, but slyness seems the fashion. Pray forgive me if I have been very presuming, or at least do not punish me so far as to exclude me from Pemberley. I shall never be quite happy till I have been all round the park. A low phaeton pulled by a pair of captured zombies would be the very thing. But I must write no more. There is some commotion on the street, and I fear the east gate has fallen again. Yours very sincerely, M. Gardiner. The contents of this letter threw Elizabeth into a flutter of spirits in which it was difficult to determine whether pleasure or pain bore the greatest share. The vague and unsettled suspicions of what Mr. Darcy might have been doing to forward her sister's match, which she had feared too great to be probable, and at the same time wished for more than anything, were proved beyond their greatest extent to be true. He had followed them purposely to town. He had taken on himself to defile his hands with the blood of a woman whom he surely never wished to see again, and he was reduced to meet, reason with, persuade, and finally bribe the man who he always most wished to avoid, and whose very name it was a punishment to him to pronounce. He had done all this for Lydia, a girl whom he could neither regard nor esteem. Brother-in-law of Wickham! Every kind of pride must revolt from the connection. He had, to be sure, done much. She was ashamed to think how much. Oh, how she longed to see her seven scabs opened and bleeding once more. True, Darcy had given a reason for his interference, which asked no extraordinary stretch of belief. It was reasonable that he should feel he had been wrong, and though she would not place herself as his principal inducement, she could, perhaps, believe that remaining partiality for her might assist his endeavours in a cause where her peace of mind must be materially concerned. It was painful, exceedingly painful, to know that Elizabeth and her family were under obligations to a person who could never receive a return. They owed the restoration of Lydia, her character, everything to him. Oh, how heartily did she grieve over every ungracious sensation she had ever encouraged, every saucy speech she had ever directed towards him. For herself, she was humbled, but she was proud of him. Proud that in a cause of compassion and honour he had been able to get the better of himself. She read over her aunt's commendation of him again and again. It was hardly enough, but it pleased her. She was even sensible of some pleasure, though mixed with regret, on finding how steadfastly both she and her uncle had been persuaded that affection and confidence subsisted between Mr. Darcy and herself. She was roused from her reflections by someone's approach. She scarcely had time to fold the letter and remove it from sight before a pair of servants entered the dojo carrying Mr. Wickham on his travelling bed. They set him down on the floor beside her and took their leave.
"I am afraid I interrupt your solitary ramble, my dear sister,"
mumbled he through a shattered jaw. "You certainly do," she replied with a smile, "but it does not follow that the interruption must be unwelcome."
"I should be sorry indeed if it were. I thought the peace of the dojo a most refreshing change from my little corner of the breakfast parlour."
"Are the others coming out?"
"I do not know. Mrs. Bennet and Lydia are going in the carriage to Meryton, and so, my dear sister, I find from our uncle and aunt that you have actually seen Pemberley."
She replied in the affirmative.
"I almost envy you the pleasure, and yet I believe it would be too much for me in my sorry state. And you saw the old housekeeper, I suppose? Poor Reynolds. She was always very fond of me. To see me thus affected would be quite a shock to her, but of course she did not mention my name to you."
"Yes, she did."
"And what did she say?"
"That you were gone into the army, and she was afraid that you had not turned out well. At such a distance as that, you know, things are strangely misrepresented."
"Certainly," he replied, biting his lips.
Elizabeth hoped she had silenced him, but he soon afterwards said,
"Did you see Darcy while you were there? I thought I understood from the gardeners that you had."
"Yes, he introduced us to his sister."
"And do you like her?"
"Very much."
"I have heard, indeed, that she is uncommonly improved within this year or two. When I last saw her, she was not very promising. I am very glad you liked her. I hope she will turn out well."
"I dare say she will. She has got over some rather extraordinary challenges."
"Did you go by the village of Kempton?"
"I do not recollect that we did."
"I mention it because it is the living which I ought to have had. A most delightful place. Excellent house. It would have suited me in every respect."
"I have heard from authority, which I thought as good, that it was left you conditionally only at the will of the present patron."
"You have?" "Yes, there was something in that. I told you so from the first, you may remember."
"I did hear, too, that you were a most disagreeable child, exceedingly cruel to the elder Darcy's servants and disrespectful of his wishes. As to your more recent behaviour, I have heard nothing that would persuade me of your having improved, whether it be your debts of honour or the countless bastards strewn about His Majesty's empire." To this Wickham could find no reply other than a fresh, aromatic soiling. Elizabeth stood and grabbed one end of his travelling bed, lifting it to her waist. Then, with a good-humoured smile, she said, "Come, Mr. Wickham, we are brother and sister, you know. Do not let us quarrel about the past. In future, I hope we shall be always of one mind." She dragged his bed across the dojo floor, through the grass, and towards the house. Chapter 53. Mr. Wickham was so perfectly dismayed by this conversation that he never again provoked his dear sister Elizabeth by introducing the subject of it, and she was pleased to find that she had said enough to keep him quiet. The day of his and Lydia's departure soon came, and Mrs. Bennet was forced to submit to a separation, which, as her husband by no means entered into her scheme of their all going to Ireland, was likely to continue at least a twelvemonth.
"Oh, my dear Lydia," she cried, "when shall we meet again?"
"Oh, Lord, I don't know. Not these 2 or 3 years, perhaps."
"Write to me very often, my dear."
"As often as I can.
But you know married women have never much time for writing. My sisters may write to me. They will have nothing else to do."
Mr. Wickham's adieus were no more affectionate than his wife's. He said little as his travelling bed was hoisted into the carriage, accompanied by spare linens and feeding jars.
"He is as fine a fellow," said Mr. Bennet, as soon as they were out of the house,
as ever I saw. I dare say I much prefer him in this relaxed state. The loss of her daughter made Mrs. Bennet very dull for several days.
"I often think," said she, "that there is nothing so bad as parting with one's friends. One seems so forlorn without them."
"This is the consequence of marrying a daughter," said Elizabeth. "It must make you better satisfied that your other four are single."
"It is no such thing. Lydia does not leave me because she is married, but only because St. Lazarus happens to be so far off. If it had been nearer, she would not have gone so soon."
But the spiritless condition which this event threw her into was shortly relieved, and her mind opened again to the agitation of hope by an article of news which then began to be in circulation. The housekeeper at Netherfield had received orders to prepare for the arrival of her master, who was coming down in a day or two to inspect his new staff and the reinforcements made to the kitchen. Mrs. Bennet was quite in the fidgets. She looked at Jane and smiled and shook her head by turns.
"Well, well, and so Mr. Bingley is coming down, sister,"
for Mrs. Phillips first brought her the news.
"Not that I care about it, though. He is nothing to us, you know, and I am sure I never want to see him again. But, however, he is very welcome to come to Netherfield if he likes it. Is it quite certain he is coming?"
"You may depend on it," replied the other, "for Mrs. Nichols was in Meryton last night. I saw her passing by and went out myself on purpose to know the truth of it, and she told me that it was certain true. He comes down on Thursday at the latest, very likely on Wednesday. She was going to the butcher's, she told me, on purpose to order in some meat on Wednesday, and she has got 3 couple of ducks just fit to be killed."
Jane Bennet had not been able to hear of his coming without changing colour. It was many months since she had mentioned his name to Elizabeth, but now, as soon as they were alone together, she said, "I saw you look at me today, Lizzie, when my aunt told us of the present report, and I know I appeared distressed. But don't imagine it was from any silly cause. I was only confused for the moment because I felt that I should be looked at. I do assure you that the news does not affect me either with pleasure or pain. I am glad of one thing, that he comes alone, because we shall see the less of him." Elizabeth did not know what to make of it. Had she not seen Mr. Bingley in Derbyshire, she might have supposed him capable of coming there with no other view than what was acknowledged. But she still thought him partial to Jane, and she wavered as to the greater probability of his coming there with his friend's permission, or being bold enough to come without it. "Yet it is hard," she sometimes thought, "that this poor man cannot come to a house which he has legally hired without raising all this speculation. I will leave him to himself." In spite of what her sister declared, and really believed to be her feelings in the expectation of his arrival, Elizabeth could easily perceive that her spirits were affected by it. They were more disturbed, more unequal, than she had often seen them. No longer did she suggest morning games of Kiss Me Dear, or evening games of Crypt and Coffin. So occupied were her thoughts that Mary was able to pin her during afternoon grappling for the first time. The subject, which had been so warmly canvassed between their parents about a 12-month ago, was now brought forward again.
"As soon as ever Mr. Bingley comes, my dear," said Mrs. Bennet, "you will wait on him, of course."
"No, no. You forced me into visiting him last year, and promised, if I went to see him, he should marry one of my daughters. But it ended in nothing, and I will not be sent on a fool's errand again. Not by a fool such as yourself, anyhow." His wife represented to him how absolutely necessary such an attention would be from all the neighbouring gentlemen on his returning to Netherfield. "'Tis an etiquette I despise," said he. "If he wants our society, let him seek it. He knows where we live. I will not spend my hours in running after my neighbours every time they go away and come back again."
"Well, all I know is that it will be abominably rude if you do not wait on him. But, however, that shan't prevent my asking him to dine here. I am determined."
Mr. Bingley arrived.
Mrs. Bennet, through the assistance of servants, contrived to have the earliest tidings of it, that the period of anxiety and fretfulness on her side might be as long as it could. She counted the days that must intervene before their invitation could be sent, hopeless of seeing him before.
But on the third morning after his arrival in Hertfordshire, she saw him from her dressing-room window enter the paddock and ride towards the house with his French musket. Her daughters were eagerly called to partake of her joy. Jane resolutely kept her place at the table, but Elizabeth, to satisfy her mother, went to the window. She looked, she saw Mr. Darcy with him, and sat down again by her sister, suddenly alarmed beyond the capacity for rational thought.
"There is a gentleman with him, Mama," said Kitty. "Who can it be?"
"Some acquaintance, or other, my dear. I suppose I am sure I do not know."
"La," replied Kitty. "It looks just like that man that used to be with him before. Mr. What's-his-name, that tall, proud man."
"Good gracious, Mr. Darcy! And so it does, I vow. Well, any friend of Mr. Bingley's will always be welcome here, to be sure, but else I must say that I hate the very sight of him."
Jane looked at Elizabeth with surprise and concern. She knew but little of their meeting in Derbyshire, and therefore felt for the awkwardness which must attend her sister in seeing him almost for the first time after receiving his explanatory letter. Both sisters were uncomfortable enough. Each felt for the other, and of course for themselves, and their mother talked on of her dislike of Mr. Darcy and her resolution to be civil to him only as Mr. Bingley's friend, without being heard by either of them. But Elizabeth had sources of uneasiness which could not be suspected by Jane, to whom she had never yet had courage to reveal her aunt's letter or to relate her own change of sentiment towards him. To Jane, he could be only a man whose proposals she had refused, and whose head she had sent crashing into a mantle. But to her own more extensive information, he was the person to whom the whole family were indebted, and whom she regarded herself with an interest, if not quite so tender, at least as reasonable and just as what Jane felt for Bingley. Her astonishment at his coming to Netherfield, to Longbourn, and voluntarily seeking her again, was almost equal to what she had known on first witnessing his altered behaviour in Derbyshire. The colour which had been driven from her face returned for half a minute with an additional glow, and a smile of delight added lustre to her eyes as she thought for that space of time that his affection and wishes must still be unshaken, but she would not be secure. "Let me first see how he behaves," said she. She sat intently at work, whittling blowgun darts, striving to be composed, and without daring to lift up her eyes, till anxious curiosity carried them to the face of her sister as the servant was approaching the door. Jane looked a little paler than usual, but more sedate than Elizabeth had expected. On the gentleman's appearing, her colour increased. Yet she received them with tolerable ease, and with a propriety of behaviour equally free from any symptom of resentment or any unnecessary complaisance. Elizabeth said as little to either as civility would allow, and sat down again to her work with an eagerness which it did not often command. She had ventured only one glance at Darcy. He looked serious as usual, and, she thought, more as he had used to look in Hertfordshire than as she had seen him at Pemberley. But perhaps he could not in her mother's presence be what he was before her uncle and aunt. It was a painful but not an improbable conjecture. Bingley she had likewise seen for an instant, and in that short period saw him looking both pleased and embarrassed. He was received by Mrs. Bennet with a degree of civility which made her two daughters ashamed, especially when contrasted with the cold and ceremonious politeness of her curtsy and address to his friend. Elizabeth particularly, who knew that her mother owed to the latter the preservation of her favourite daughter from irremediable infamy, was hurt and distressed to a most painful degree by a distinction so ill applied. Darcy, after inquiring of her how Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner fared in the collapse of the East Gate, a question which she could not answer, said scarcely anything. She was in no humour for conversation with anyone but himself, and to him she had hardly courage to speak. "Me," she thought, "who fears no man, who fears not death itself, and yet unable am I to summon but a single word. It is a long time, Mr. Bingley, since you went away," said Mrs. Bennet. He readily agreed to it. "I began to be afraid you would never come back again. People did say you meant to quit the place entirely, but, however, I hope it is not true. A great many changes have happened in the neighbourhood since you went away.
The number of unmentionables has been happily reduced to but a fraction of what it was when you first came. Miss Lucas is sent to her grave by the plague, and one of my own daughters is newly married. I suppose you have heard of it. Indeed, you must have seen it in the papers. It was in the Times and the Courier, I know, though it was not put in as it ought to be. It was only said, lately, George Wickham Esquire to Miss Lydia Bennet, without there being a syllable said of her father, or her service to His Majesty, or anything. Did you see it? Bingley replied that he did, and made his congratulations. Elizabeth dared not lift up her eyes. How Mr. Darcy looked, therefore, she could not tell. "'It is a delightful thing, to be sure, to have a daughter well married,' continued her mother. "'But at the same time, Mr. Bingley, it is very hard to have her taken such away from me. "'They are gone down to Kilkenny, a place in Ireland, it seems, "'and there they are to stay I do not know how long. "'The St. Lazarus Seminary for the lame is there, "'for I suppose you have heard of his being crippled in a carriage accident "'and of his intention to enter the priesthood. "'Oh, my poor Wickham, if only he had as many friends as he deserves.' Elizabeth, who knew this to be levelled at Mr. Darcy, was in such misery of shame that she could hardly keep her seat. Her misery received soon afterwards material relief from observing how much the beauty of her sister rekindled the admiration of her former lover. When first he came in, he had spoken to her but little, but every 5 minutes seemed to be giving her more of his attention. He found her as handsome as she had been last year, as good-natured and as unaffected, though not quite so chatty. Jane was anxious that no difference should be perceived in her at all, and was really persuaded that she talked as much as ever. But her mind was so busily engaged that she did not always know when she was silent. When the gentleman rose to go away, Mrs. Bennet was mindful of her intended civility, and they were invited and engaged to dine at Longbourn in a few days' time. "'You are quite a visit in my debt, Mr. Bingley,' she added. "'For when you went to town last winter, you promised to take a family dinner with us as soon as you returned. I have not forgot, you see, and I assure you I was very much disappointed that you did not come back and keep your engagement.' Bingley looked a little silly at this reflection, and said something of his concern at having been prevented by business. They then went away. Mrs. Bennet had been strongly inclined to ask them to stay and dine there that day, but though she always kept a very good table, she did not think anything less than 2 courses could be good enough for a man on whom she had such anxious designs, or satisfy the appetite and pride of one who had 10,000 a year. Chapter 54 As soon as they were gone, Elizabeth walked out to recover her spirits. Mr. Darcy's behaviour astonished and vexed her. "'Why, if he came only to be silent, grave, and indifferent,' said she, "'did he come at all?' She could settle it in no way that gave her pleasure. "'He could be still amiable, still pleasing to my uncle and aunt when he was in town, and why not to me? If he fears me, why come hither?' If he no longer cares for me, why silent? Teasing, teasing man. I will think no more about him. I am death's betrothed, after all, sworn to honour and obey only the warrior code and my beloved Master Leo. Her resolution was for a short time involuntarily kept by the approach of her sister, who joined her with a cheerful look. Now, said she, that the first meeting is over, I feel perfectly easy. I know my own strength, and I shall never be embarrassed again by his coming. I am glad he dines here on Tuesday. It will then be publicly seen that on both sides we meet only as common and indifferent acquaintance. Yes, very indifferent indeed, said Elizabeth, laughing. Oh, Jane, take care. My dear Lizzie, you cannot think me so weak. Weak, not in the slightest. Rather, I think you more powerful than ever in making him fall very much in love with you. They did not see the gentleman again till Tuesday, and Mrs. Bennet in the meanwhile was giving way to all the happy schemes which the good humour and common politeness of Bingley in half an hour's visit had revived. On Tuesday there was a large party assembled at Longbourn, and the two who were most anxiously expected were in very good time. When they repaired to the dining-room, Elizabeth eagerly watched to see whether Bingley would take the place, which, in all their former parties, had belonged to him, by her sister.
Her prudent mother, occupied by the same ideas, forbore to invite him to sit by herself. On entering the room, he seemed to hesitate, but Jane happened to look round and happened to smile. It was decided. He placed himself by her. Elizabeth, with a triumphant sensation, looked towards Mr. Darcy, who bore his friend's choice of seat with noble indifference. She would have imagined that Bingley had received his permission to pursue Jane, had not she seen his eyes likewise turned towards Mr. Darcy with an expression of half-laughing alarm. His behaviour to her sister was such during dinner-time as showed an admiration of her which persuaded Elizabeth that if left wholly to himself, Jane's happiness and his own would be speedily secured. Though she dared not depend upon the consequence, she yet received pleasure from observing his behaviour. It gave her all the animation that her spirits could boast, for she was in no cheerful humour. Mr. Darcy was almost as far from her as the table could divide them. He was on one side of her mother. She knew how little such a situation would give pleasure to either. She was not near enough to hear any of their discourse, but she could see how seldom they spoke to each other, and how formal and cold was their manner whenever they did. Her mother's ungraciousness made the sense of what they owed him more painful to Elizabeth's mind, and she would at times have given anything to leap onto the table and administer the 7 cuts of shame in front of Mr. Darcy, to see her pitiful blood drip onto his plate, atonement for her many prejudices against him. She was in hopes that the evening would afford some opportunity of bringing them together, that the whole of the visit would not pass away without enabling them to enter into something more of conversation than the mere ceremonious salutation attending his entrance. Anxious and uneasy, the period which passed in the drawing-room before the gentleman came was wearisome and dull to a degree that almost made her uncivil. She looked forward to their entrance as the point on which all her chance of pleasure for the evening must depend. "If he does not come to me then," said she, "I shall give him up for ever, and shall never again divert my eyes from the end of my blade." The gentleman came, and she thought he looked as if he would have answered her hopes. But alas! The ladies had crowded round the table, where Miss Bennet was making tea and Elizabeth pouring out the coffee, in so close a confederacy that there was not a single vacancy near her which would admit of a chair. Darcy walked away to another part of the room. She followed him with her eyes, envied everyone to whom he spoke, had scarcely patience enough to help anybody to coffee, and then was enraged against herself for being so silly. "A man who has been refused with foot and fist, how could I ever be foolish enough to expect a renewal of his love? Is there one among the sex who would not protest against such a weakness as a second proposal to the same woman? He should sooner make an offer to a zombie." She was a little revived, however, by his bringing back his coffee cup himself, and she seized the opportunity of saying, "Is your sister at Pemberley still?"
"Yes, she will remain there till Christmas."
"And quite alone? Have all her friends left her?"
"All but the servants and her personal guard."
She could think of nothing more to say. But if he wished to converse with her, he might have better success. He stood by her, however, for some minutes in silence, and at last walked away.
When the tea-things were removed and the card-tables placed, the ladies all rose, and Elizabeth was then hoping to be soon joined by Mr. Darcy, when all her hopes were overthrown by seeing him fall a victim to her mother's voracious recruitment of crypt and coffin players. She now lost every expectation of pleasure. They were confined for the evening at different tables, and she had nothing to hope but that his eyes were so often turned towards her side of the room as to make him play as unsuccessfully as herself. Mrs. Bennet had designed to keep the 2 Netherfield gentlemen to supper, but their carriage was unluckily ordered before any of the others, and she had no opportunity of detaining them.
"Well, girls," said she, as soon as they were left to themselves, "what say you to the day? I think everything has passed off uncommonly well, I assure you. The dinner was as well dressed as any I ever saw. The venison was roasted to a turn, and everybody said they never saw so fat a haunch. Thank you, Lizzie, for wrestling us so fine a buck."
The soup was 50 times better than what we had at the Lucas's last week, and even Mr. Darcy acknowledged that the partridges were remarkably well done, and I suppose he has two or three French cooks at least. And my dear Jane, I never saw you look in greater beauty. Mrs. Bennet, in short, was in very great spirits. She had seen enough of Bingley's behaviour to Jane to be convinced that she would get him at last, and her expectations of advantage to her family, when in a happy humour, were so far beyond reason as she was quite disappointed at not seeing him there again the next day to make his proposals.
"It has been a very agreeable day," said Jane to Elizabeth. "The party seemed so well selected, so suitable one with the other. I hope we may often meet again."
Elizabeth smiled.
"Lizzie, you must not do so. You must not suspect me. It mortifies me. I assure you that I have now learnt to enjoy his conversation as an agreeable and sensible young man without having a wish beyond it. I am perfectly satisfied from what his manners now are that he never had any design of engaging my affection. It is only that he is blessed with greater sweetness of address and a stronger desire of generally pleasing than any other man." "You are very cruel," said her sister. "You will not let me smile and are provoking me to it every moment. I have half a mind to force a profession of love from you." "How hard it is in some cases to be believed, and how impossible in others. But why should you wish to persuade me that I feel more than I acknowledge?"
"Oh, you are more obstinate than a Hunan mule. If you persist in indifference, do not make me your confidant." Chapter 55 A few days after this visit, Mr. Bingley called again, and alone. His friend had left him that morning for London, but was to return home in 10 days' time. He sat with them above an hour, and was in remarkably good spirits. Mrs. Bennet invited him to dine with them, but he confessed himself engaged elsewhere. "Next time you call," said she, "I hope we shall be more lucky." He should be particularly happy at any time, etc., etc., and if she would give him leave, would take an early opportunity of waiting on them. "Can you come tomorrow?" Yes, he had no engagement at all for tomorrow, and her invitation was accepted with alacrity. He came, and in such very good time that the ladies were still in their sparring gowns, and none of them without considerable beads of exercise moisture on their skin. In ran Mrs. Bennet to her daughter's room in her dressing-gown, with her hair half-finished, crying out, "My dear Jane, make haste and hurry down! He is come! Mr. Bingley is come! He is indeed! Make haste, make haste! Here, Sarah, come to Miss Bennet this moment. Wash away her exercise moisture and help her on with her gown. Never mind Lizzie's hair!" "We will be down as soon as we can," said Jane. "But I dare say Kitty is forwarder than either of us. She went upstairs half an hour ago." "Oh, hang Kitty! What is she to do with it? Come, be quick, be quick! Where is your sash, my dear?" But Jane would not be prevailed on to go down without one of her sisters. The same anxiety to get them by themselves was visible again in the evening. After tea, Mr. Bennet retired to the library, as was his custom, and Mary went upstairs to her weights. Two obstacles of the five being thus removed, Mrs. Bennet sat looking and winking at Elizabeth and Kitty for a considerable time without making any impression on them. Elizabeth would not observe her, and when at last Kitty did, she very innocently said, "What is the matter, Mama? What do you keep winking at me for? What am I to do?" "Nothing, child, nothing. I do not wink at you." She then sat still 5 minutes longer, but unable to waste such a precious occasion, she suddenly got up, and saying to Kitty, "Come here, my love, I want to speak to you," took her out of the room. Jane instantly gave a look at Elizabeth, which spoke her distress at such premeditation, and her entreaty that she would not give in to it. In a few minutes Mrs. Bennet half opened the door and called out, "Lizzie, my dear, I want to speak with you." Elizabeth was forced to go. "We may as well leave them by themselves, you know," said her mother as soon as she was in the hall. "Kitty and I are going upstairs to sit in my dressing-room." Elizabeth made no attempt to reason with her mother, but remained quietly in the hall till she and Kitty were out of sight, then returned into the drawing-room. Mrs. Bennet's schemes for this day were ineffectual. Bingley was everything that was charming, except the professed lover of her daughter. His ease and cheerfulness rendered him a most agreeable addition to their evening party, and he bore with the ill-judged officiousness of the mother, and heard all her silly remarks with a forbearance and command of countenance particularly grateful to the daughter. He scarcely needed an invitation to stay for supper, and before he went away, an engagement was formed chiefly through his own and Mrs. Bennet's means for his coming next morning to shoot the first autumn zombies with her husband. After this day, Jane said no more of her indifference. Not a word passed between the sisters concerning Bingley, but Elizabeth went to bed in the happy belief that all must speedily be concluded unless Mr. Darcy returned within the stated time. However, she felt tolerably persuaded that Bingley's attentiveness to Jane had met with that gentleman's concurrence. Bingley was punctual to his appointment, and he and Mr. Bennet spent the morning together hunting the first unmentionables to wander south in search of soft earth. Mr. Bennet led his companion to Longbourn's northernmost field, where they spent the better part of an hour setting several hand traps of Mr. Bennet's own design, which they baited with heads of cauliflower. Every so often, a zombie would stagger out of the woods and into the field where Mr. Bennet and Mr. Bingley were concealed beneath a bundle of branches. The living would watch as the dead discovered the cauliflower, and thinking it was a soft, succulent brain, reach down to grab it. Upon this, the trap would clamp shut around its arm, and the men would advance, beating the creature with their musket stocks, shooting it, and setting it alight. Bingley was much more agreeable than Mr. Bennet expected. There was nothing of presumption or folly in the young man that could provoke his ridicule or disgust him into silence, and for his part, Mr. Bennet was more communicative and less eccentric than Mr. Bingley had ever seen him. Bingley, of course, returned with him to dinner, and in the evening Mrs. Bennet's invention was again at work to get everybody away from him and her daughter. Elizabeth, who had a letter to write, went into the breakfast-room for that purpose soon after tea. On returning to the drawing-room when her letter was finished, she saw her sister and Bingley standing together over at the hearth, as if engaged in earnest conversation, and had this led to no suspicion, the faces of both, as they hastily turned round and moved away from each other, would have told it all. Their situation was awkward enough, but hers, she thought, was still worse. Not a syllable was uttered by either, and Elizabeth was on the point of going away again when Bingley, who as well as the other had sat down, suddenly rose, and whispering a few words to her sister, ran out of the room. Jane could have no reserves from Elizabeth where confidence would give pleasure, and instantly embracing her, acknowledged with the liveliest emotion that she was the happiest creature in the world. "'Tis too much,' she added, "'by far too much. I do not deserve it. Oh, why is not everybody as happy?' Elizabeth's congratulations were given with a sincerity which words could but poorly express. Every sentence of kindness was a fresh source of happiness to Jane, but she would not allow herself to stay with her sister or to say half that remained to be said for the present. "'I must go instantly to my mother,' she cried. "'I would not on any account allow her to hear it from anyone but myself. "'He is gone to my father already. "'Oh, Lizzie, to know that what I will have to relate "'will give such pleasure to all my dear family, "'how shall I bear so much happiness?' "'She then hastened away to her mother, "'who was sitting upstairs with Kitty. "'Elizabeth, who was left by herself,' now smiled at the rapidity and ease with which an affair was finally settled that had given them so many previous months of suspense and vexation. For the moment it mattered little to Elizabeth that she would be losing her most trusted companion on the battlefield, her closest confidant, and the only sister she never feared the slightest silliness from. She was overcome by a feeling of complete victory— For after all of Darcy's anxious circumspection, all of Miss Bingley's falsehood and contrivance, the affair had reached the happiest, wisest, most reasonable end. In a few minutes she was joined by Bingley, whose conference with her father had been short and to the purpose. "'Where is your sister?' said he. "'With my mother upstairs. She will be down in a moment, I dare say.' He then shut the door, and coming up to her, claimed the good wishes and affection of a sister. Elizabeth honestly and heartily expressed her delight in the prospect of their relationship. They shook hands with great cordiality, and then, till her sister came down, she listened to all he had to say of his own happiness and of Jane's perfections, and in spite of his being little trained in the deadly arts, Elizabeth really believed all his expectations of Felicity to be rationally founded, because he and Jane were so alike in every other imaginable way. It was an evening of no common delight to them all. The satisfaction of Miss Bennet's mind gave a glow of such sweet animation to her face as made her look handsomer than ever. Kitty simpered and smiled and hoped her turn was coming soon. Mrs. Bennet could not give her consent or speak her approbation in terms warm enough to satisfy her feelings, and when Mr. Bennet joined them at supper, his voice and manner plainly showed how really happy he was. Not a word, however, passed his lips in allusion to it till their visitor took his leave for the night, but as soon as he was gone, he turned to his daughter and said, "Jane, I congratulate you. You will be a very happy woman." Jane went to him instantly, kissed him, and thanked him for his goodness. "You are a good girl," he replied, "and I have great pleasure in thinking you will be so happily settled. I have not a doubt of your doing very well together. Your tempers are by no means unlike. You are each of you so complying that nothing will ever be resolved on, so easy that every servant will cheat you, and so generous that you will always exceed your income." "I hope not so. Imprudence or thoughtlessness in money matters would be unpardonable in me."
"Exceed their income? My dear Mr. Bennet," cried his wife, "what are you talking of? Why, he has 4,000 or 5,000 a year, and very likely more." Then addressing her daughter, "Oh, my dear, dear Jane, I am so happy. I was sure you could not be so beautiful for nothing. I remember as soon as ever I saw him, when he first came into Hertfordshire last year, I thought how likely it was that you should come together. Oh, he is the handsomest young man that ever was seen."
Wickham, Lydia, all were forgotten. Jane was beyond competition her favourite child. At that moment she cared for no other. Her younger sisters soon began to make interest with her for objects of happiness which she might in future be able to dispense. Mary petitioned for the use of the library at Netherfield, and Kitty begged very hard for a few balls there every winter. Bingley, from this time, was of course a daily visitor at Longbourn, coming frequently before breakfast and always remaining till after supper, unless when some barbarous neighbour, who could not be enough detested, had given him an invitation to dinner which he thought himself obliged to accept. As the days grew shorter, the number of zombies in Hertfordshire grew greater. The herds now came in droves, chased south by Hardening Earth and His Majesty's muskets. Elizabeth had now but little time for conversation with her sister, for she, Kitty, and Mary were every day needed to dispense of this trouble or that, and Jane could bestow no attention on anyone else while Bingley was present. In the absence of Jane, he always attached himself to Elizabeth for the pleasure of talking of her, and when Bingley was gone, Jane constantly sought the same means of relief.
"He has made me so happy," she said one evening, "by telling me that he was totally ignorant of my being in town last spring. I had not believed it possible."
"I suspected as much," replied Elizabeth, "but how did he account for it?"
"It must have been his sister's doing. They were certainly no friends to his acquaintance with me, which I cannot wonder at, since he might have chosen so much more advantageously in many respects. But when they see, as I trust they will, that their brother is happy with me, they will learn to be contented, and we shall be on good terms again, though we can never be what we once were to each other."
"That is the most unforgiving speech," said Elizabeth, "that I ever heard you utter. Good girl, it would vex me indeed to see you again the dupe of Miss Bingley's pretended regard.
Would you believe it, Lizzie, that when he went to town last November, he really loved me, and nothing but a persuasion of my being indifferent or another siege of London would have prevented his coming to the country again?"
Elizabeth was pleased to find that he had not betrayed the interference of his friend. For though Jane had the most generous and forgiving heart in the world, she knew it was a circumstance which must prejudice her against him.
"I am certainly the most fortunate creature that ever existed," cried Jane. Oh, Lizzie, why am I thus singled from my family and blessed above them all? If I could but see you as happy, if there were but such another man for you. If you were to give me 40 such men, I never could be so happy as you. Till I have your disposition, your goodness, I never can have your happiness. No, no, let me find comfort in cutting down dreadfuls, and perhaps, if I have very good luck, I may meet with another Mr. Collins in time.
The situation of affairs in the Longbourn family could not be long a secret. Mrs. Bennet was privileged to whisper it to Mrs. Phillips, and she ventured, without any permission, to do the same by all her neighbours in Meryton. The Bennets were speedily pronounced to be the luckiest family in the world, though only a few weeks before, when Lydia had first run away, they had been generally proved to be marked out for misfortune.
Chapter 56. One morning, about a week after Bingley's engagement with Jane had been formed, as he and the females of the family were sitting together in the dining-room, their attention was suddenly drawn to the window by the sound of a carriage, and they perceived a chaise and four driving up the lawn. The horses were post, and neither the carriage nor the livery of the servant who preceded it were familiar to them. As it was certain, however, that somebody was coming, Bingley instantly prevailed on Jane to avoid the confinement of such an intrusion and walk away with him into the shrubbery, where she had promised to instruct him in buck-wrestling. They both set off, and the conjectures of the remaining three continued, though with little satisfaction, till the door was thrown open and their visitor entered, accompanied by a pair of ninjas. It was Lady Catherine de Bourgh. They were, of course, all intending to be surprised, but their astonishment was beyond their expectation. She entered the room with an air more than usually ungracious, made no other reply to Elizabeth's salutation than a slight inclination of the head, dismissed her guard, and sat down without saying a word. Elizabeth had mentioned her name to her mother on her ladyship's entrance, though no request of introduction had been made. Mrs. Bennet, all amazement, though flattered by having a guest of such high importance, received her with the utmost politeness. After sitting for a moment in silence, she said very stiffly to Elizabeth, "I hope you are well, Miss Bennet. That lady, I suppose, is your mother." Elizabeth replied very concisely that she was. "And that, I suppose, is one of your sisters?"
"Yes, madam," said Mrs. Bennet, delighted to speak to Lady Catherine. "She is my youngest girl but one. My youngest of all is lately married, and my eldest is somewhere about the grounds, walking with a young man who, I believe, will soon become a part of the family."
"You have a very small park here," returned Lady Catherine, after a short silence.
"It is nothing in comparison of Rosings, my lady, I dare say."
Elizabeth now expected that she would bestow her condolences on the passing of Charlotte and Mr. Collins, as it seemed the only probable motive for her calling. But none were offered, and she was completely puzzled. Mrs. Bennet, with great civility, begged her ladyship to take some refreshment, but Lady Catherine very resolutely, and not very politely, declined eating anything, and then, rising up, said to Elizabeth, "Miss Bennet, there seemed to be a prettyish little dojo on one side of your lawn. I should be glad to examine it, if you will favour me with your company."
"Go, my dear," cried her mother, "and show her ladyship about. I think she will be pleased with the artifacts."
Elizabeth obeyed, and running into her own room for her parasol, attended her noble guest downstairs. As they passed through the hall, Lady Catherine opened the doors into the dining-parlour and drawing-room, and pronouncing them, after a short survey, to be decent-looking rooms, walked on. Her carriage remained at the door, and Elizabeth saw that her waiting geisha was in it. They proceeded in silence to the dojo. Elizabeth was determined to make no effort for conversation with a woman who was now more than usually insolent and disagreeable.
"How could I ever think her like her nephew?" said she, as she looked in her face.
As soon as they entered, Lady Catherine began in the following manner. "You can be at no loss, Miss Bennet, to understand the reason of my journey hither. Your own heart, your own conscience, must tell you why I come."
Elizabeth looked with unaffected astonishment. "Indeed, you are mistaken, madam.
I have not been able to account for the honour of seeing you here.
Miss Bennet, replied her ladyship in an angry tone, you ought to know that I am not to be trifled with. But however insincere you choose to be, you shall not find me so. My character has ever been celebrated for its sincerity and frankness, just as my killing powers have been celebrated as having no equal. A report of a most alarming nature reached me 2 days ago. I was told that not only was your sister on the point of being most advantageously married, but that you, that Miss Elizabeth Bennet, would, in all likelihood, be soon afterwards united to my own nephew, Mr. Darcy. Though I know it must be a scandalous falsehood, though I would not injure him so much as to suppose him to take any interest in a girl of your low birth, I instantly resolved on setting off for this place, that I might make my sentiments known to you.
If you believed it impossible to be true, said Elizabeth, colouring with astonishment and disdain, I wonder you took the trouble of coming so far. What could your ladyship propose by it?
To insist upon having such a report universally contradicted.
You're coming to Longbourn to see me and my family, said Elizabeth coolly, will be rather a confirmation of it, if indeed such a report is in existence.
If? Do you then pretend to be ignorant of it? Has it not been industriously circulated by yourselves? Do you not know that such a report is spread abroad?
I never heard that it was.
And can you likewise declare that there is no foundation for it?
I do not pretend to possess equal frankness with your ladyship. You may ask questions which I shall not choose to answer.
This is not to be borne. Miss Bennet, I insist on being satisfied. Has he? Has my nephew made you an offer of marriage?
Your ladyship has declared it to be impossible.
It ought to be so, it must be so, while he retains the use of his reason. But your arts and allurements may, in a moment of infatuation, have made him forget what he owes to himself and to all his family. You may have drawn him in with your cheap Chinese parlour tricks.
If I have, I shall be the last person to confess it.
Miss Bennet, do you know who I am? Have you not heard the songs of my victories over legions of Satan's slaves? Have you not read of my unmatched skill? I am almost Mr. Darcy's nearest relation in the world, and entitled to know all his dearest concerns.
Such great skills, such a slayer of zombies. And yet, when one was in your home, you had not perception enough to see her.
Are you so daft as to suppose that I did not know Charlotte for what she was? Are you incapable of understanding my generous motives, that my new priest might know some measure of happiness? Tell me, why do you suppose she changed so slowly? Why did I invite her to tea so often? For the pleasure of her company? No. It was my serum which kept her alive those few happy months, a few drops at a time, unnoticed, into her cup.
Such an experiment can hardly be called generous. You did nothing but prolong her suffering.
Let me be rightly understood. This match, to which you have the presumption to aspire, can never take place. Never. Mr. Darcy is engaged to my daughter. Now what have you to say?
Only this, that if he is so, you can have no reason to suppose he will make an offer to me. Lady Catherine hesitated for a moment, and then replied,
The engagement between them is of a peculiar kind. From their infancy they have been intended for each other. It was the favourite wish of his mother as well as of hers. While in their cradles we planned the union, and now, at the moment when the wishes of both sisters would be accomplished in their marriage, to be prevented by a young woman of inferior birth, of no importance in the world, and trained in China, of all places? Are you lost to every feeling of propriety and delicacy? Have you not heard me say that from his earliest hours he was destined for his cousin?
Yes, and I heard it before. But what is that to me? If there is no other objection to my marrying your nephew, I shall certainly not be kept from it by knowing that his mother and aunt wished him to marry Miss de Bourgh. If Mr. Darcy is neither by honour nor inclination confined to his cousin, why is he not to make another choice? And if I am that choice, why may I not accept him?
Because honour, decorum, prudence, nay, interest forbid it. Yes, Miss Bennet, interest, for do not expect to be noticed by his family or friends if you wilfully act against the inclinations of all. You will be censured, slighted, and despised by everyone connected with him. Your alliance will be a disgrace. Your name will never even be mentioned by any of us.
These are heavy misfortunes, replied Elizabeth, but the wife of Mr. Darcy must have such extraordinary sources of happiness necessary.